I know I've seen Sam Shellhouse is with us, if we're okay to move down to number 20. We will do that now and get an update on law enforcement.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Mr. Secretary. My name is Sam Shellhouse. I'm the law enforcement section chief for the Game Fishing Corps. I'm just going to give you a short law enforcement update here this morning. And Chris pulled up a presentation for me. Thanks, Chris. I've given you a few updates in the past about hiring and stuff like that, and glad to report things are still trending in the right direction there. Thought I'd do things a little different today and just give you a couple case highlights that our officers have made in the past year. This past month, we were able to gather at the law enforcement section all our officers from across the state. We get together annually once a year, and we go through some training. But one of the things we do there is we have a case highlight where our officers from around the state will present some of the unique or challenging cases, cases that they use certain technologies and things like that. And it's a lot of fun to hear, to see the work that our officers are doing. We got a lot of great men and women out there that work hard every day to protect the resources. And so I thought today I'd share a few of those with you. I pared them down quite a bit. Some of those cases are pretty extensive, and I found a couple today that I think I can share with you that I hope you find interesting. Both of them involve the use of technology, and then one thing that stands out is these two came in from TIPS calls. The TIPS program is a valuable resource to the protection of our resource in South Dakota. So the first one started in Central South Dakota, came in as a TIPS call, involved three non-residents from California and then one local. And story was from the informant that they had found an odd whitetail buck walking along the road. It was that night, right at dusk. They made a bunch of videos, took a lot of pictures with the deer. So something was unique there. But instead of calling us and trying to figure out what was going on, they shot the buck. They shot it at night with the light. They cut the deer up. They took the meat. They left the head at the lodge where they were staying. And the person that gave us the information even gave us specific fence posts where it's located on. And amongst the folks there, it just kind of became a joke to them. They didn't bother them, didn't think it was serious. So that's the information our officers had provided with that, with a few pictures. You can see on the left one there, something unique with that deer, whether it was sick or diseased, whether it was tame, captive at one point, we don't know. We never got to find out on that. And then just some other pictures that were provided here. And so clearly our officers had something going on there. So our officers in the central part of the state came up with a game plan. Officers really utilize search warrants quite a bit. And whether we're seizing phones, we're seizing evidence, things like that, we really know how to navigate the court processes, search warrants, subpoenas, affidavits. Our officers are second to none when it comes to that in the state. And so they decided to start gathering some evidence, and they drove into the place where this was at. And turns out that the suspects were out of the area hunting at that point in time. They did see what they believed to be the buck head on a fence post, but at that point in time, they didn't see it. They thought they were going to see where this went. And so they weren't able to contact the individuals on that first one. So they waited a few days and went back for a second contact. And as they drove in, first thing they noticed is the antlers were gone. So they made contact with the individuals. The first subject they briefly spoke to, he declined knowing anything, what was going on. He asked a few pointed questions, answered them very vaguely, and then pretty soon said he was done talking to our officers, didn't want to talk anymore, which is not too uncommon. So we served a search warrant on him. We seized his phone for evidence, and that process began while he was visiting. Well, one of our officers was visiting with that subject. Another officer was visiting with the local, and the individual decided to share the whole story. He didn't want the trouble that came with it. He knew what they did, they shouldn't have done. And so while officer was visiting with the first subject, the second subject tells the whole story. and our officers get a full cooperation and confession out of that. And here's what they were told, that the subjects were just out driving around one night in early October. So obviously the East River deer, West River deer seasons aren't even open yet. We have some archery seasons going on at that point in time. They find this buck on the side of the road, and they started petting it. It was something unique going on there. Like I said, we never got to figure out what was going on. It's not uncommon for officers to get calls from local ranchers, local landowners, that they see a deer that's injured, that's sick, that's diseased. You know, we typically work with the folks that call in and figure out the best resolution there. They didn't know what was wrong with the buck, but they decided to that they were going to take matters into their own hand. They shot it at night, spotlight. They cut it up. They took it back to the lodge. They transferred the meat out of state and took it back to California with them. And so instead of seizing the phone, they were very cooperative. We just went through them, looked at their phone. They documented the whole thing. Everything was on camera. So they were processing the meat there. The picture on the right is just the deer right after they shot it. There's the deer, as you can tell. I mean, it's a nice average white-tailed deer there, but something was off with that deer. They were able to get that close to it. They processed it, boned it out right out in the field. Just some more pictures. There's one on the left where they're actually shooting it off the road right there. So after all said and done, all three individuals will charge for unlawful possession of big game. The disposition of the case is some of the charges were changed, shooting big game from a highway. Fine amount for the first subject was $578, 1 year revocation, 30 days in jail suspended. Charge for the second individual who had a hand in it was the same thing. The score of the score of the deer, the Boone and Crockett score is 143 inches. And so that civil amount for that deer is $2,000. Any score of a white-tailed deer over 140 inches, then you enact a civil. The trophy civil damages, and it's scaled all the way up to about $5,000. So the irony of this whole case is the three individuals from California, they all had, you know, social media accounts and things like that. They all supported anti-poaching efforts in Africa. So that was something that was very unique about this case, is that they were all strong supporters of anti-poaching efforts in another continent. So that was the first one. That was it was a neat case. Our officer did a great job following through with that. Again, you know, utilizing technology, utilizing the TIPS program. The second case that I thought was kind of an interesting one was the golden acorn baiting investigation. The golden acorn in this case was shelled corn, and this took place up in the northeast corner of the state, not far from the border of Minnesota. Again, came in through our TIPS program, great program that we have. We really pushed the program hard, and it's been a successful program since the 80s. This was just started off with a trespass complaint. Landowner called their officer. He had seen a UTV with the Minnesota Ag license plate on it, which is kind of unique. We can't just run those through a state radio dispatch like we do every other license plate. So we had to do a little digging, call the right Department of Ag, all of that stuff in the state of Minnesota. We work with our neighboring officers in our surrounding states quite a bit. They were able to find who the license plate came back to and begin an investigation there. After that, we met with the landowner. Landowner points to the area where the trespass came from, several properties in the area. Our officer went in, searched the property, found tree stands, found data cameras, cell cameras. Also found a lot of bait in that area. So we kept investigating from there, start looking into the individual. You know, the social media accounts, Facebook, all of those are natural avenues for us. Found out the individual, an avid outdoorsman. We look on our licensing database. We can get some cell phone numbers. We can do some address and license history. And then we preserve all that data with the social media platforms or the cell phone platforms. And we request warrants, and we look back for multiple years of evidence there. Just some pictures that were found on the social media search there on the bottom. So when we serve that warrant, we obtained it within a few days. You start looking at phone numbers, you start identifying several subjects. And this is just one little snapshot of text messages that are going back and forth. Just as you can imagine, some of your own text message strings that go by, I mean, they can go on for days, months, even a year if you get the right group. And they just openly talk about baiting, where they're baiting. And our officers learned that they had their own names for each individual place where they were hunting. And so we had to do a little more digging. We had to find out where Paul's woods were, what the out driveway was, where the hunter ground was. So our officers searched a lot of these areas. We worked with a lot of local landowners, a lot of cooperators in that area, and we were able to locate multiple new sites. Again, found the same type of evidence, found corn in all these places, found the same type of data cameras, and we're able to get a case started there. Once all the evidence was collected, all the individuals were identified, coordinated with Minnesota Department of Natural Resources and their conservation officers, and we headed to Minnesota to conduct two interviews at the same time. We work in partnership with the Minnesota officers there. First subject agreed to meet the officers at the PD, and after a lot of discussions, a lot of interviews, and admits to taking South Dakota deer to a Minnesota taxidermist to be checked in, admits the South Dakota deer that he took was unlawfully harvested because he baited it. And it turns out that the second subject was just like subject one, but the third subject, officers met. He was heading back to South Dakota at the same time our officers were heading to Minnesota to interview him. So like ships on the sea, they passed him on the road, and they were able to catch up with him later. He was pretty uncooperative, didn't want to talk to us, but we had enough evidence with him. After it was all said and done, the first subject had seven charges of knowing trespass, illegal methods, hunting under illegal methods, unlawful possession. Fine amounts were $1,800, and I believe he had two deer for a total of $4,000 civil and a year revocation. Subject two with four charges, $1,000 in fine, $2,000 in civil, and subject three with six charges, $1,600 and $1,000 in civil. So good outcome on those cases. The takeaways from this is, officers spend a lot of time on the technological side of this, utilizing the cell phones and the social media stuff. And then, like he said, there's sometimes just some good old game ward luck needs to come into play when you get to the right spot, you find the right location. So, like I said, those are just two cases that I thought we could highlight here real quick, just to show a little snippet of the work our men and women do all season long. And so with that, be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions for Chief Shanks?
Any questions, please? So was the lodge owner involved in that?
Yes, he was.
So was there any repercussion back to his lodge business?
So it wasn't an actual like pheasant lodge or anything like that. It was just more of a resort for places to stay. So as far as his hunting privileges or anything like that, there was nothing involved there.
Well, very interesting.
Thank you.
Commissioner Bartman, thank you, Sam. It's kind of an interesting presentation. The 1 year revocation or whatever, where they can't apply again, is that stiff enough, do you think, especially when you have one gentleman at seven counts, is that statutory or is that something just within the department that you use as far as?
Good question, Commissioner Burling. That is statutory. The 1 year revocation is laid out. There are ways to get subsequent years, but you need multiple deer in a short amount of time to get that.
Yes, please. Thank you. And then search warrants. How long does it take you to get a search warrant in this case, especially if it's out in the middle of, nowhere, and you have to get a judge, of course, to grant that search warrant, I'm assuming. So how long does it take you to get a search warrant?
Good question again. Everyone's a little different. Sometimes if the officer has done their homework, got everything laid out, it doesn't take very long at all, a couple hours. If an officer has to start from scratch, they have to lay out the whole affidavit, have to get that approved by a supervisor, and then go contact a judge and get that signed. So sometimes that can take 6 to 8 hours, depending on the availability of a magistrate. Yeah.
Any other questions? Sure. Commissioner White.
Commissioner White here. Can you tell us just a little bit about the success of the TIPS program and how that program has led to this many arrests, percentage-wise?
Yes, sir. Good question. The TIPS program has been around since the late 80s. It's an anonymous program, so anybody that calls in can remain anonymous 100% way through the program. That's the bread and butter of that program. It's been an extreme success. We utilize social media on our TIPS program. We have a lot of publications that go out. It's got its own board, its own that runs the program. And it just is a, you know, as conservation officers, I mean, at full staff, we would have just over 80 officers, and not all of those are out in the field. And 800,000 square miles in the state of South Dakota. We need more sets of eyes out there helping us. And the TIPS program is just a huge success. There's ways to donate for it. When you apply for a license, as you guys well know, that there's a button you can click there, and that's how it's supported. And when somebody provides a tip like that, like evidence in these two programs, then they get a reward with that as well. And the rewards are pretty significant. So thank you, sir.
I wanted to follow up on the social media. I'm just curious, the conservation officers, do they go through some of the social media hunting groups and kind of look through some of those for the not so smart users that are putting their unlawful harvests up there? Or do you wait for tips to come in from other social media users? Oh, Commissioner Spring.
I was wondering, on those two cases that you had there, you know, the fine was much different. It was both the deer. Is that because of different counties, or why is the difference in the fine?
Good question, Commissioner Spring. It is because it's probably different judges in different areas, different jurisdictions, setting up those fine amounts. Class two misdemeanors, such as your smaller violations, those are scheduled out for our officers, so those will be pretty standard. But class one misdemeanors, such as unlawful possession of a big game animal, those are usually determined by the judge. So there will be some differences in those from judge to judge and county to county.
There's no state law that's set to. It looked like the first case there, fine should have been much higher. And that's the reason for my question.
There is a minimum set for like a class one misdemeanor, but it's above that the judge will easily determine what that fine amount is. So the civil damages are all scheduled out. That's the only difference there.
Any other questions? Yes, Secretary.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Real quick, Sam, can you just cover kind of where we're at with, you know, our vacancies we had in our law enforcement section, what we expect to be, you know, in the next few months as far as field stations being filled, and kind of just give the commissioner an update on the overall recruitment and retention of officers here in the last 6 months?
Absolutely, Secretary Roebling. Currently, if we were at full staff, we'd have 86 law enforcement officers, including myself. Right now, we're at, if we count, now, there's a couple ifs in here, but if we count the ones we have in training right now, which are five in field training, and we have three at the academy, we'd be at 82 if all of those make it through, which is super exciting for us. We put a lot of effort into the recruiting. Targeted pay increases from Governor Noem last year really helped. We're out on social media working with Nick Harrington and his team and trying to get the message out there when we do have applications. And then the other thing we've been doing is we go out and seek the ones we want. They have the qualities and characteristics that we're really interested in. We'll make a concerted effort to get them going in the right direction. We make sure that every seasonal and intern that works for this agency gets to talk to a conservation officer. And if they have the desire to ride along with us, see what we do, learn a little bit more, we make sure that opportunity is available. So we've really put a lot of effort into the recruitment and then retaining of our current officers. And so far, it proves to be paying off. And we keep hoping that it goes in the right direction. So
thank you, Sam, for that. And I just want to add, too, to the commissioner's knowledge, we had 20 vacancies July 1st of 2022. So obviously, you can hear here that we've been very, very active in producing, I would say, new recruits into our officer fields. Honestly, I just can't say enough about Sam and leadership of the law enforcement section. There's a lot of success that falls on his shoulders and the shoulders of his staff, his training officers, and just the overall great men and women we have working within the law enforcement section. So I just want to say thank you. Keep up the good work and keep on recruiting great officers for this agency. So thank you, Sam. Appreciate it.
All right. And I would just like to echo what the secretary said. I had the chance to visit with you and some of your team in southeastern South Dakota, which included a couple of new folks down there. You guys are doing a great job. And so keep up the good work. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Very good.